call the meeting to order today for the In-State Energy Committee. Let the record reflect that the In-State Energy Committee was convened at 7:30 a.m. January 24th, 2013. Following Senate members are present today. Senators Co-Chair John Coghill, Senator Peter Machicki, Senator Dennis Egan, Senator Bill Wilkowski, and myself, Senator Bishop. I'd like to recognize today our staff, Christopher Dickrell, Senate Secretary's Office. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Lori Berg, our LIO moderator. Good morning, ma'am. I'd like to also let the record reflect this will be a listen only today throughout the LIOs around the state. My committee staff is Pete Feldman over here to my right. And before we get started, as usual, the no cell phone environment, turn them off, please. And at this point, I'd like to just turn it over for a minute for some comments from my co-chair, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Chairman. My staff for this committee is going to be Reneva Moss and helped by Jordan Schilling. So just to let you know, if any of those want to contact my office, since this is our first meeting, just to give those who are listening, watching, one of the things that we want to accomplish in the process of this is looking first here at geographically on the energy issues in Alaska generally, but it's going to be really focused on in-state energy issues. And so it could be southeastern, it could be the central, south-central Alaska. The issues that are looking for solutions, and we'd like to help kind of formulate some of those solutions. Certainly the two chairmen here have the interior of Alaska very, very interested in things that are going to be happening in the interior. We're really going to be focused on that, and we know that they often get divided between electrons, electricity, and that is transmission and power generation, and home heating and industrial use for hydrocarbons. So we're going to probably wherever necessary, divide those into the best we know how regional issues and try to end up with either a way to do good planning or a good policy that has a plan element to it. So I think that's kind of the focus that we've been talking about as we move forward on this. So thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I'd like to thank the AEA staff here today for coming, and I'd like to thank everybody for this 7:30 a.m. meeting today. We've asked AEA, Alaska Energy Authority, to come to the committee and present an overview of the various energy-related projects throughout the state, projects that are currently under construction, and an update on the projects are already in the hopper, if you will, and underway. And I'd like to, at this time, invite AEA to come to the table, and please, Sarah and Jean, come up to the table and introduce yourself for the record, and the floor is yours at this point. And I'd also like the record to reflect Senator Giesel, our chair of co-chair of Resources Committee, just joined us. Good morning, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Fisher Goad. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority, and it's a pleasure to be here this morning.
And I'm Gene Terrio, Deputy Director at AEA.
So, Mr. Chairman, what we've prepared is just an overview of the Alaska Energy Authority programs and some of the projects. In addition, in conversations that we've had, we know that this won't be the first time that the Alaska Energy Authority will be at a 7:30 meeting with the Senate Energy Committee. So it's a pleasure to be here to give this overview, and looking forward to the sessions of work before us. So the Alaska Energy Authority's mission is to reduce the cost of energy. We do this in with a variety of ways in programs. We invest in Alaska's energy infrastructure. We are diversifying Alaska's energy portfolio. We have developed energy planning and policy, and we provide technical assistance and community assistance. I do have two additional deputy directors, Sandra Moeller, our deputy director of rural energy, and Sean Scaling, the deputy director of alternative energy and energy efficiency. Because there will be continued opportunities for AEA to present more detail in our programs, I thought it was most appropriate to make sure that our most recent deputy director, Jean Terrio, whose title is the statewide energy policy development deputy director, was important for him to be here today to do this overall presentation. So our infrastructure and large projects, many of you are familiar with these. We have the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project that the state has provided a capital contribution of 50% of that cost, that project, which costs over $328 million to build. It produces about 10% of the rail belt electricity. It is an AEA-owned asset. It is a low-cost energy producer in the rail belt. The installed capacity is 120 megawatts, and it does provide 4.5 cents kilowatt hour power. We have outstanding bonds for that project until 2021, and one of the unique situations on the Bradley Lake model is that although the bonds will be paid off in 2021, because the state invested the 50% up front on that project, the utilities are obligated to continue to pay relatively the same amount of debt service at that time for an additional 20 years to the state of Alaska. And so that will happen in 2021. So we also own the Alaska Intertie. There is...
If I may interrupt.
Yes, sir.
Is it all right? We ask questions along the way?
Yes.
I think just for those listening in, and part of our purpose here is to give as broad a view as we can.
Certainly.
Some people may not even know where Bradley Lake is. Geographically.
Oh, okay, sure. Bradley Lake is actually in the Homer area, and Homer Electric Association provides the operations of the project. So it is in the Kenai Peninsula, but it does provide power all the way for the entire rail belt up to Fairbanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, excuse me just for one second. As we're walking through, you know, I have one question, but I just want to frame it for a second. Yesterday we were in resources, and yeah, we know Bradley Lake produces 120 megs, but it's capable of producing, but what's actually really going out the line is another number. So, and we need to up, and, you know, there's some talk about we need to do line upgrades to maximize the full effect of that 120 megs. So, you know, just, is that accurate?
Yeah, the installed capacity is the 120 megawatts, but the energy produced is 10% of the rail belt electricity, and that would be roughly, there's 5,600 gigawatt hours of electricity in the rail belt, so it would be 10% of that, the 560 gigawatt hours. I should probably...
Let me do a follow-up, and then I think if I don't nail it, Senator Marchiefi, I think I heard yesterday it was at 90 what? 90 megs is all it could produce.
It becomes unstable at 90.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the installed capacity. I know there's a couple of the rail belt guys, the utility CEO sitting behind me that can correct me on that. But yes, it's the energy capacity. One of the projects that we're pursuing is the Battle Creek project, which won't increase the capacity of the project, but it will allow more diversion of water to the project to provide additional energy from the project without increasing the capacity. So, yes, the installed capacity is different than what it would actually typically operate at.
Senator, just on that, since the chairman of resources is here, we may just invite her to the table so that she can join the conversation.
Absolutely. Senator?
I think Senator Marchiefi.
Senator Marchiefi had a question, sir.
Oh, no. It was with Soldier Creek. They said it added 10%, which would bring the usable capacity somewhere around 90. From yesterday's meeting, I don't know a lot about Bradley Lake.
Well, in one of the unique situations with the projects that we do own, we do manage those projects in conjunction with the Rail Belt Utilities. And one of the things that changed in 1993 on the AEA statutes is there is a concept of maximum utility control for the operation and management of these projects. So we do have a Bradley Lake BPMC committee, which is a management committee that is made up of the utilities and Alaska Energy Authority in order to operate and manage the project. So, the additional asset that we do own is the Alaska Intertie, and that runs from Willow to Healy. That is also, it's AEA, do also manage that with the Rail Belt Utilities, and we have contracts with the utilities to manage that project. The new project that we are pursuing, of course, is the Susitna-Watonna hydroelectric project that is installed capacity is anticipated to be 600 megawatts, which would provide roughly 50% of the electricity in the rail belt. And so Senate Bill 42 had authorized AEA to pursue that licensing to own and operate that project. This is the first new project that we would own and operate since the Bradley Lake hydroelectric project. The history of the Alaska Energy Authority, the AEA was created in 1976 primarily to own and operate projects, in particular hydroelectric projects. So although we've divested certain projects from AEA's ownership, we do continue to own, and then we will pursue the Susitna project. But we did own, build and own the Four Dam Pool project, which serves Kodiak, the Copper Valley region, and Southeast Alaska, Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan. And so those utilities formed a Four Dam Pool association to purchase the projects in, I believe, about 2001 is when that happened. Since then, that joint action agency is actually split up to Kodiak owning the Terror Lake project, Copper Valley Electric Association owning the Solomon Gulch project. SEPA was formed, which is before they had their name, before they were SEPA, we kind of referred to them as the Two Dam project, which were the remaining Swan Lake and Tyee Lake projects in Southeast Alaska. SEPA was formed and also owns the intertie that connects those two projects. And that it's still a joint action agency, but the owning utilities are all municipally owned utilities in Southeast Alaska. We did also own the Larsen Bay hydroelectric project, which was 2 years ago was divested and is now under ownership of the city of Larsen Bay. So this is just a map to kind of show you in perspective of where AEA is in the state and what we are doing. This is just to give a very broad representation of the variety of programs that we have between the Renewable Energy Fund, some of the rural system upgrade programs that we manage, and energy efficiency projects. Several of these energy efficiency projects that we are working on were from the federal stimulus funds that AEA managed, the EECBG grants. In particular, AEA managed those projects. But I do like to make sure that folks do understand that we are not just about a large hydro project. We're not just about the rail belt. We do have a very broad portfolio of projects that impact the entire state. So with that, certainly.
Just a sort of a policy question. So the state, your state agency.
Yes.
So the state owns a significant portfolio of energy projects today. What would be, this may be a tough number to pinpoint, but what would be the overall value of state-owned energy projects in Alaska today?
Well, the two that we own right now is the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project and the Alaska Intertie. The cost to build that project was $328 million, and the cost to build the intertie was over $100 million. So those projects have been you know, depreciating in value, but I think if that's, does that get...
Well, and then, so some of the smaller rural projects where you've been involved, the state doesn't technically own them, you've just helped in some of the funding and management of the projects?
Correct. What we do in those circumstances, and there's a couple slides later that we'll talk a little bit more about the rural programs, we actually manage those programs or those projects on behalf of the small communities. There's oftentimes small communities don't have the technical capability to build the project, and then we also train and work with them for them to operate the project. But some of it is being able to manage the payroll of the local workforce, providing the construction management oversight, and being able to pay for the contractors and the work to be done, and then getting reimbursed from whatever our funding source is. Primarily, that was the federal funds for several years through the Denali Commission, and the state of Alaska has continued to fund the Alaska Energy Authority to continue to build RPSU, rural power system upgrade projects, and bulk fuel projects. So, yes, we do not technically own those. In fact, in 1993, there was legislation that restricted AEA from owning new additional projects. That's why we needed Senate Bill 42 2 years ago in order to pursue the Susitna-Watana project.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I could, and Senator, as Sarah mentioned, that even the assets that we do own, the two large ones that she mentioned, Bradley Lake and the Alaska Intertie, the policy call was that we would work with local utilities to pass off as much control, day-to-day control of those assets to the local utilities and not, you know, gather up all of that control and manage it just from the state, but work with the utilities themselves as much as possible.
Sure. Thank you.
So the Renewable Energy Fund was created in 2008 and last year was reauthorized for another 10 years. We are in the process of recommending our round six projects. We have done these in rounds on an annual basis. I apologize, there is a typo in that slide. The 217 projects is actually 227 projects approved, totaling $202 million. There are 60 projects currently under construction, and the projects that are under construction, the estimate of fuel displacement and value of that for the grantees is roughly $45 million of annual savings. So the round six recommendations, we will be providing that information actually to the legislature today. There's a packet of information that's coming down. We provide a tremendous amount of detail to the legislature. It's essentially our analysis of all the projects that have come in, and we do develop the list in funding levels. There's a $25 million funding level, the $50 million funding level, and then in total, we do have a recommended projects of roughly $56 million, and it was 60 projects that will be recommended.
Just to clarify, that comes in the form of the report to the legislature?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Mr. Through the Chair, Senator Coghill. I'm a little rusty on my protocol here. The legislation that authorized the Renewable Energy Fund program was pretty unique. It's a recommendation program. So we aren't appropriated money to then issue grants. We are required to issue or go through a solicitation process every year and provide you a ranked list of projects to the legislature. So you have the information on how we have viewed the projects based upon the statutory requirements of the program. We provide that in a ranked process, and then the legislature determines how far down the list they would fund it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our most recent fund and program that we've been managing is the Emerging Energy Technology Fund that was created by Senate Bill 220 in 2010, and Senator Wilkowski was the co-chair of the Senate Energy Committee or the Senate Resources Committee at the time that helped usher through that legislation. So I'm The significant difference between the Emerging Energy Technology Fund and the Renewable Energy Fund is the Emerging Energy Technology Fund actually does provide AEA with the funds to actually issue the grants. So once we go through our process, we issue the grants. That actually required us to do a very detailed process and regulatory process in order to get those projects, the process down and projects recommended and funds granted. So we have gone through our first round of funding. We have 16 projects that have been selected for funding. $8.9 million was available through the Denali Commission fund. So roughly it was a 50-50 match between state funds and federal dollars for that program. The priority for the funds were to be for Alaska businesses, utilities, or nonprofits in tribal or local governments for emerging technologies. And what we were looking for was truly demonstration projects that could be demonstrated and commercially viable within 5 years. So those were our guiding principles on developing the Emerging Energy Technology Fund grants.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just on the emergency technology, I'm just guessing, and because we're trying to keep a regional look at this, mm-hmm. those emerging technologies, do they generally fall into the more rural areas?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Coghill, it is a statewide aspect, again, of that program. There are projects that have been funded that do have a rural perspective. One of the grantees is a Hatch Energy Company in order to develop a flywheel, and I think specifically to look at a flywheel that would be associated with a wind diesel system in order to help regulate the wind power coming into the diesel system. So we're very interested in that application in rural Alaska. There are hydrokinetic projects that we have funded, diesel energy efficiencies for diesel generators, and looking at power and storage capabilities and heat pumps and biomass projects. So it is a very broad variety. And I think one thing to mention on the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, it is not just focused on renewable energy. The hydrocarbon and fossil fuels is also something that is an eligible applicant or an eligible project for the program. So it's very broad-based.
I think, you know, for us, that's one of the things for in-state energy we'll be looking at. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, the applicants and how they fall out. And, you know, I know, for example, on in-river hydrokinetics, there are at least three different variations of that, maybe even more. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, as we move down into in-state energy and we look at the smaller communities, I'll really be interested in see what is beginning to emerge as the kind of the things that we can do. Mm-hmm. So I think, Senator Gene, you had a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, to the Senator's question, part of where these projects, the application actually ends up being, is driven by economics. If you can imagine, there may be an emerging energy technology that produces power at 20 cents per kilowatt. That wouldn't make sense in Anchorage, but when you're out in a rural setting where their competing cost of power is 50 cents, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a program that is targeted just at rural, but just due to the economics, a lot of times the application, the rural application is what makes the most sense.
And the reason I bring it up, Gene, is, you know, one of the things that we're going to be trying to focus on is just that. We have regional areas that are not just regionals geographically, but regions economically as well, that are going to, we're going to be looking for ways that we can help that solution moving forward, or maybe tie together bills that have put you in a position to look at them. Now, how do we tie this together on an energy policy strategy, you know? So I just wanted to bring that up as something that we'll probably will be looking at. So thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Continue, please.
Thank you. The one thing I should mention with the Emerging Energy Technology Fund, too, is that we are in partnership with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power at the University of Alaska Fairbanks to help us manage that program. They are taking the lead in working with our project managers with respect to the data collection and the analysis of the technology, and it's been a very good working relationship with ASAP, and it's been extremely valuable in us helping us to develop this program. The one I did want to mention, the one picture there is the helium balloon wind turbine. That is a that's one of the potential. Well, that is one of the grantees that we are looking at for the project. So they're interesting projects, but it was definitely, I think, when the legislation was created and we were looking at what type of programs were needed with respect to the energy portfolios, there was this bit of a gap between research and development truly at the university level to the commercialized technology. And so we're kind of in this interesting wedge where, you know, the Renewable Energy Fund is really about commercialized technology, and so there was the fund was created to really develop these demonstration projects to actually broaden our portfolio of options in Alaska.
It's, Mr. Chairman, the way I would see that it is a research and development, which has its moments of things that you're going to call out, you know. So and so the university under the give me the acronym again.
ASAP.
Yes. ASAP. Is probably one of the places you're looking to?
Yes. Yes. Right. So continuing on with the AEA programs, we also have spent a great deal of time and effort to make sure that we continue to update the energy statistics for the state of Alaska every year. This has been something we've been doing annually now for the last 3 years, and prior to that, we were only updating them roughly every 5 to 10 years, and so that was something that was really identified as something we needed to do quite regularly, so we have a system to do that and continue to update those statistics. And the statistics are real important. That it provides us a baseline to measure how we're doing with our goals. One of the goals, of course, that was passed in House Bill 306 was the 50% renewable by 2025. The other one that comes into our efficiency and conservation programs is improving the efficiency by 15% by 2020. And so we have a methodology through our statistic collection to measure how we are doing on meeting the energy efficiency goal. And we do work in partnership with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the other entity that through their residential programs is a significant agency with respect to making sure that we put forth programs and recommend programs to the administration and to the legislature with respect to these are the things that we can do to help us meet this energy efficiency goal. AEA's focus has been on the commercial buildings, the rural public buildings, and industrial facilities, and electrical efficiency in the diesel systems that we do install in rural Alaska. So we are certainly.
I'd just like to let record reflect Senate President Charlie Huggins just walked in the room. Thank you. Continue, ma'am.
Could I?
When you get up. Pete, excuse me.
Assembled in the room is our folks from, you know, that represent urban areas as well as rural areas. But one of the focuses of this group is statewide energy plan. And what I'm seeing, just being sympathetic to the survival issues of the cost of energy in rural Alaska as well. But one of the themes I'm seeing through here are statements of state goals, 50% renewable electricity by 2025, projects that are commercially viable within 5 years, improving efficiency 15% by 2020. Is there a sort of a clearinghouse of energy policy that exists that we can research independent of this meeting to see where the state thinks we are now and where we want to go?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, to the Senator's question, I think the Alaska Energy Authority is that clearinghouse. We've been following the policy that has been established by the legislature and the administration over the last couple of years, certain pieces of legislation, House Bill 306, Senate Bill 220 in 2010, I believe.
Yes.
I think 2010 established a lot of the policy direction from the the legislative body to the administration on this is the energy policy for the state of Alaska, and empowering the authority then to go out and implement that policy. You know, and I, now being the new deputy director in charge of that policy, watching that policy, making sure that we're implementing that policy, making sure that the programs that we've got in place are achieving those goals, would probably be the point person for you to contact to track down specific information.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll add too that we have been working internally, and we will provide it. I'm hoping that we can even get it finalized today. We didn't have it available for this meeting. We've been working on what we've been calling an energy cheat sheet that is a schematic that shows the various energy programs, which ones are at AHFC, what AEA is doing. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has the new program, the SETS program, that they are developing that is anticipated to play a very significant role in financing energy projects, in the future. So I think that's we do recognize that it would be nice to have a schematic to do that. And so in doing that, though, we've had several different reviews that we wanted folks to take a look at it before we kind of send it out for consumption. So but I'm hoping that we will kind of have that finalized either today or tomorrow. So,
and Mr. Chairman, just on that point, you know, you have your energy statistics on electric generation here. I think having kind of the electrons and the hydrocarbons, even though they mixed under wind diesel, but they're still, you know, between your industrial base electricity and industrial base hydrocarbons, they really are very different looks. And so I was not aware that you had created a statistical list of energy use across Alaska. Is that easily gotten to?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, we actually have a report that is on our webpage. I'd be happy to send some hard copies to the
on your webpage. We can find it.
And then also, Senator, I think I dropped off this with this is a summary.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've
this
I'll
is a summary
it.
Of the statistics that this statistics report. This is kind of a summary and a high level overview of some of the statistical findings for electricity around the state. I have several more back in Anchorage, but I'll make sure that we get additional copies down to this committee.
All right, thank you very much.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have a list of energy state expenditures for energy projects over the last 20, 30 years, by any chance?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do have is I don't have it with me, but we can certainly produce for you a list of at least the last 10 years of projects that the Alaska Energy Authority has funded and either have been funded for and have constructed. So I have a fairly comprehensive list of that. In addition, there has been some higher level OMB work that's been done with respect to the total amount of funding that's been made available for energy programs that encompasses beyond what AEA does, the other programs. And so we'll make sure that we get something to the committee.
Thank you.
Continue, please.
So one of the things we wanted to highlight is the community concept. And we continue this type of work through village end use efficiency programs, what we call our VEEP program. That's the one thing I'll tell you about the Alaska Energy Authority. We can come up with acronyms for just about everything. So, and so please, if I say something that that's not easily known, please.
You've been very good at it. Thank you.
We have worked with partners in developing a comprehensive assessment of a community's energy needs, and so we highlighted the night mute concept. with respect to the work that we did at Nightmute and what was accomplished. And I think it was a good effort between AEA, AHFC, the Alaska Village Electric Association, the Village Council presidents, and the Denali Commission, and several other entities. And so we're able to come into the community and do a comprehensive a review of their energy needs. We do continue this with our VEEP program, and that is something that we've been trying to deal with, and going into a community and dealing with community facilities, doing lighting retrofits and upgrades. And this is particularly effective in these very, very high cost rural communities where 60 cents a kilowatt hour is not unknown for their electricity costs.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
On that. So my guess is some of these things, is the reporting going to come through Alaska Housing or through AEA?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, the VEEP program is something that comes through us, and we have the capability, you know, the reporting capability for that.
So then we should be able to see what some of those efforts have started, you know, giving for energy efficiency?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, and that is something that, although we didn't dig down into the specific statistics of our energy efficiency programs, we can certainly either cover that in another hearing, or we can certainly provide you additional information on those efforts.
Sure, and I think just for us, the energy conservation, as well as the you know, new generation, new technology, and use of oil or gas is going to be things that we'll be asking about. So it's something that it should be in our view somewhere through this process.
And through the chair, Senator Coghill, you know, in addition to working towards achieving that 15% goal, we do believe that the energy efficiency is really our, you know, the first thing that we should be doing. And I think the Alaska programs have been funded to help us do that. It's really a significant step, and one of the first steps that should be done when we talk about the in-state use of energy.
Just for what it's worth, it's a little bit of a painful journey, because I think Fairbanks, we did pretty good on energy efficiency and got hit by higher rates, and so there was a lot of consternation over that. And as I was door knocking this summer, I heard quite a bit about that.
And just to go back to your Nightmute project, you know, your last bullet there, does it make any difference, in my opinion, what hydrocarbon you're burning? Efficiency is the key, because there's no finite supply of hydrocarbons, and anytime you can cut your fuel burn in half in a chain of 59% savings, that's a good goal, and that's a great outcome.
Mr. Chairman, just on the policy of that, I think as Sarah started off with, our directive for the authority is to lower the cost of energy for Alaskans. And that's not just to lower the per unit price, but lower people's average energy bill.
So the power project.
Just on that point. So what happened to the bills in Nightmute? Just give a sense.
Can you go back and have some information?
Yeah, well,
was the 59 Nightmute for sure, specifically 59%?
Do you have a, if I could, Mr. Chair, do you have a number on what the kilowatt hour cost went from, or the diesel cost went from?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't have that with me right now. When we did the upgrades at Nightmute, the electrical rates were 53 cents a kilowatt hour. So,
and Mr. Chairman, just on that, especially since we're talking about a village like Nightmute, one of the questions that kind of continually plagues us is under the power cost equalization, that would go to, you know, really residential issues, and the businesses really are left. So under this type of program, under the community concept, do businesses get included in some of the conservation measures?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, one of the things that we have been looking at and working on is commercial funding and financing of commercial loans to do energy efficiency upgrades. There is a loan program in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for alternative energy and energy efficiency loans for commercial entities. That's something that has been recently establish. And, you know, we are making efforts to make sure that there's financing available for those commercial efforts in particular. I guess the one thing that, when you mentioned the power cost equalization, it is a program that doesn't cover commercial facilities. And that's one of the things where, with the renewable energy program, where we can actually displace the diesel, it impacts all the kilowatt hours generated in a community, not just the 33% that is eligible for the PCE program. So, and in addition, I think that is one of the things that, as far as state funding, I think the policy and the directive has been more for loans for commercial entities and not grants.
I just wanted to hear it out loud because I think that's, you know, we don't want to discourage entrepreneurs in business and communities. And you may be able to get your homes at a lower cost, but if you don't have businesses there, then enterprising just goes away. So.
Mm-hmm. Senator Wilkow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what are your thoughts on expanding the PCE program to include businesses in rural Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is legislation that's that has been introduced in the House to address that. I don't have a position with respect to commercial, whether commercial should be included in the program or not. It had been included at a very small amount in back in 1999, and that was removed at that point. Schools are not included in the PCE program either. So those are impacts that what we will be doing through the analysis of when the bill is heard is to provide the fiscal analysis of the impact of doing that for the PCE program. You know, when you start having grants to there is a limitation on the program with respect to the PCE program is about a $40 million program right now, and there would be a cost increase in order to include commercial customers.
And just to follow up on that, Mr. Yes. Do you have a sense of the cost for including schools and including businesses?
We haven't completed the analysis. I mean, the bill hasn't been scheduled yet, but we have had our folks looking at what the current costs of the program are, and then an estimate of what we think the commercial impact would be. So, we just don't have a completed fiscal note at this point yet.
Mr. Chairman, just to the senator's question, I think hopefully we will provide the information for you to consider, though, the policy of if you include other entities that can draw on that fund, can the endowment, what level of additional demand can the endowment support? If the state is heading into an area or a time of tighter money, to be careful that the endowment stays such that it can certainly cover the residential demand.
And Mr. Chairman, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to know, you know, what is available for those, because there's no question that policy call on PCE just kind of continues to highlight the idea that, or the issue that businesses in smaller communities just get hit with the highest cost of doing business. And so it's just something that we just got to keep plugging away at. And so I think the renewable granting and the loan funding is something that I think I will want to look at, especially kind of, it looks like the regional areas, the harder it is to supply energy, the more necessary that's going to be. So, and we got to look at that kind of that flex point. So, thank
and
you.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of other questions that were asked. Senator Coghill mentioned that as he went door-to-door, he heard that the residents in his district were encouraged to conserve energy, and then the electric utility rewarded them by raising the utility rate. I think there's a couple things in play there. Over the period of time where people were actually conserving, the cost of the fuel may have gone up, you know, and that has to be passed on. In addition, if the utility is selling fewer kilowatts, they're selling fewer widgets, that means the fixed cost of operating the utility has to be spread on fewer widgets. And so that fixed cost per unit of energy goes up a little bit. And so to Senator Wilkowski's question about the impact of what had happened in Nightmute as they went through this effort, the amount of fuel that each resident used was cut dramatically. They probably reduced their usage of power, but the cost per kilowatt may have actually gone up. But their overall annual energy bill went down. So you have to keep all of those things in mind. And then just with regards to the loans or programs to help businesses, one of the things that we're wrestling with right now is that for large businesses, they can come and they can come to ADA and apply for a loan. They've got the equity in their business can underpin the loan. But a lot of small businesses, they're fully leveraged. And so if the state is going to loan them money, the state actually has to take a second position so that if the business goes bankrupt, the bank that loaned the money to build the building gets paid, but the state, there might not be enough equity for the state to get paid back at all. So we're finding that with some loan programs, we're not seeing the activity that we hope. With regards to schools, there's a program to try and incent schools to take on energy efficiency measures. The school districts, though, are really geared towards doing improvements for schools through the school CIP requests, and so we're not seeing the level of activity that we had hoped there. So we're trying to wrestle with those issues and figure out ways to remove barriers or sort of reshape programs so that we get the level of activity that we think policymakers had hoped for.
So, Senator, with that comment, I wrote a note down earlier this morning. Maybe, is it because, maybe should we think about centralizing the loans for energy, a one-stop shop? Are we doing a good enough job with educating the school district that there's this other pot of money available and other than outside the CIP request, you know, those types of things? I think I'm hearing a little bit of that.
Yeah, with regards to the school districts, we just held a teleconference with Commissioner Hanley to go over that issue and start a dialogue of, you know, how can we get to a point of maybe a breakthrough there on making sure that the school districts know about the programs, and again, trying to remove any impediments or reshape the program somehow so that we get better utilization.
I'd just like to, a gentle reminder to everyone, we've been here, I say, 45 minutes? And we're on slide 8, and there's 21 slides.
Oh.
And this is the first of many discussions on energy, and it's a great topic. I love it. I just want to make sure for everyone's benefit that we can get through the slides and we'll be continuing on. So don't take that as a don't ask any more questions, but let's, you know, kind of roll it up a little bit more succinct. So.
Point well taken, Mr. Chairman.
That's a shorter question.
Continue on, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was glad that Gene had mentioned the other issues with respect to the loan programs. As a his role as a policy development and coordinator, it is really to take a look at those issues and see what we can do and improve with respect to the programs and making sure that we're able to deliver effective programs to our customers. So I know the legislature expects that of us and other agencies. So I think we are definitely in the mode of reviewing those programs and seeing, you know, what can be done as improvements. And that actually brings me to the Power Project Fund, which is AEA's loan program for energy projects. We actually are looking at this one. I've discovered over the years with the Power Project Fund, it hasn't been particularly utilized too much. A lot of utilities that are cooperatives have other funding sources that are available to them. But we have seen a lot more activity recently with this program. It does require a legislative approval for a project that has state involvement or assistance of more than $5 million. And so this gets a little tricky. If there was some type of $5 million grant for a project and they needed a $1 million loan, you'd actually have to approve that loan. So it's not a $5 million loan. It's really that combined state assistance total. But, you know, one thing I've wanted us to do and take a look at this program is make sure that it is user-friendly, that applicants know what information we need and make sure that they're providing good information to us with respect to evaluate the project. So our rural energy programs, we've touched upon some of these things already this morning. The bulk fuel and the rural power system upgrades, we have completed over $300 million worth of projects since 2000 in partnership with the Denali Commission. We are constructing 13 projects this coming year. And we provided circuit rider technical assistance in 53 communities last fiscal year. And that brings us to also our training and technical assistance. We do actually have a very hands-on approach when we do go to a rural community to help build one of these energy infrastructures. But we do take a significant amount of time to make sure that they are trained. We coordinate with the Department of Labor on and send folks to Avtec for power plant training. It's been a very effective program. We do provide training also for power cost equalization for the utility clerks to know what we need in order for them to provide accurate monthly reports, and we can better process the PCE payments. Most recently, last year, we were funded for two new energy specialists to provide really hands-on technical assistance. And what we're trying to do is work with communities at the get-go to make sure that they can, for example, submit renewable energy grants for projects that are really ready. So we really had felt like there was a bit of a gap with respect to some of the smaller rural communities in order to apply for a grant. So we have been offering technical assistance on that front to help them develop good applications. So the Power Cost Equalization Program, there's over 180 communities that benefit from the PCE program. It is available for community facilities and residential customers that we had mentioned before. It is to provide this assistance for the communities that have costs that are 3 to 4 times higher than the more urban areas of the state. So we have a program, again, that's roughly $40 million of an annual expenditure each year. Our PCE endowment is roughly $788 million. That program is funded for a 3-year monthly average market value in order to pay out from the endowment. So the $400 million that was appropriated 2 years ago for the program is working its way through that 3-year average. And we've seen a significant increase this coming fiscal year for the amount that will be available for the endowment. So it works into the system, and I think it will be fully utilized, and the endowment will be paying completely for the PCE program in 2016.
Senator Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I hear from some of my friends up in Fairbanks is that that rural Alaska has PCE, which helps them contain their costs somewhat. Urban Anchorage, Southeast have lower cost energy, but Fairbanks really doesn't have any relief at this point. And so one of the ideas I've heard floated around is expanding PCE to include some of the interior areas like Fairbanks. Is that something that you're looking at all?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that's something that I know in past years there's been legislation, again, that's been advanced to potentially do that. That's, again, too, that we'd have to provide the cost information to the legislature if the program was expanded to provide PCE to more communities. The eligibility for PCE is based on the fuel usage and the size of the communities from what they were using for fuel in 1984. So it's not really an expandable program at this point, and then without legislation. So it has been looked at. I know that there are communities that have PCE that, with PCE, at least the residents pay less than some communities that do not have PCE. Fairbanks, for instance, I think Fairbanks is at 23 cents a kilowatt hour. And a PCE community, some of them, with the equalization amount, the floor of the program, I believe, is about 14.5 cents a kilowatt hour right now, and the PCE program pays approximately 95% of that for the first 500 kilowatt hours. So based upon that formula, you can have a PCE community that would be paying roughly 15 to 16 cents a kilowatt hour. Again, it's for only 33% or so, 30% of the kilowatt hours produced in that community, though.
Continue, please. Thanks.
So our regional energy planning, In 2008, Steve Hagenson was the executive director of the Alaska Energy Authority and put forward developed the energy pathways plan. That was completed in 2010. And what we have been doing at that time is really work on the further development of the plan, which the pathway was somewhat of an inventory of what is available for communities in order to develop and help reduce the cost of energy. What we've been doing with the regional energy planning is really taking that forward in looking at a regional approach with respect to energy plans. So we wanted to make sure that we did this as a regionally led and locally driven projects. So we have completed the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan and the Railroad Integrated Plan. Now, those were two plans that were really more state-driven, AEA-driven, and managed plans. And what we've been doing with the more recent regional energy plans is really working with a regional leader in order to put forth the plans. And we think it's very important to do that and have that regional buy-in and that local community buy-in. So things that we are doing with respect to supporting these regional solutions is, you know, really looking at, you know, how is the energy produced? What is keeping the lights on? And oftentimes it's, you know, diesel systems in rural Alaska, and taking an evaluation of these smaller power systems and making sure that they are safe. What type of efficiency is there, and what is that source of power? We're also looking at whether renewable energy can be integrated into those systems, and then also, of course, we don't want it to end with just looking at the energy portfolio. Really, the opportunity, and what we really want to look at is what is the economic development opportunity, and understanding that. Reduced energy costs or reasonable energy rates can help drive economic development, just as, of course, high energy costs can help really, really dampen any type of further economic development in a community. So the way that we've been pursuing the regional plans is looking at the preliminary planning, definitely reviewing the work that was done in the pathway, looking at what stakeholders need to be incorporated into the process, developing an inventory and assessment and the analysis of the of the energy and the resources that are available. Look at how other energy plans have been developed, and develop a draft. We are trying to get the regional plans to be in a bit of a standardized format. We want to definitely have the regional leaders of these plans solicit comments on the draft. We'll help work through the technical assistance and help with any evaluation, either specific to projects or specific to the technology that they're looking for, and then develop the final document. So here's the map of what we've been using as the Alaska Regional Energy Plans. And these do roughly follow the Alaska Native Corporation boundaries. We thought that's been a pretty effective way in order for us to incorporate the stakeholders into the solutions. The one thing with that, we also know that there is an opportunity to cross regions. And so we want to make sure that although we have these regional planning efforts, that we don't want them to be bound by the boundaries. If there's an opportunity to share resources, we want to make sure that we're able to incorporate that into the plans.
That's good. And trusting on that local knowledge to make that happen, too.
So the plan, the Chulista region plan, was one of the first plans that we initiated beyond the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan. It is a unique region where it's very large. It has a larger population, and it includes 56 villages. There is high energy and transportation costs. There is wind resources in the area, and there is the potential of a hydropower development with the Chicoutimi Lake project that the Navista Light and Power Group is developing. The Chulista region is also looking at community clusters to look for bringing potential energy into areas that have either existing or potential interties. There's a Tuxet Bay, Tununuk, and Nightmute potential, and Alaknak and Emonic, St. Mary's, Pitkus Point, and Mountain Village, and Pilot Station, which are AVEC communities. So there is that cluster community approach that's going on in the Chulista region that we think is very valuable to see how these communities can be interconnected. And it's my understanding, too, in the Chulista region, they are also doing some additional work on looking at the cluster communities for other infrastructure beyond energy infrastructure. For example, school facilities and other infrastructure that could further benefit a greater region than just one small community. So the current regional planning contracts that we have are listed up on this page. I won't list them all out. In that picture, we did have a regional, we've been holding regular regional planning groups in meetings to make sure that the regional planners from, all the various regions can get together and they can look at what each, what are some of the roadblocks that folks are seeing with their plan, and perhaps maybe they can get some ideas from the planning effort from the other entities. We've been primarily trying to work with the ARTRs in the region. They're a regional leader. They have a role of economic development, and we think that's also a very good synergy and segue to really get to how the regional plan can help impact the economic development efforts in the region.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Just so those listening know what an ARTR is.
Oh, sorry. Alaska Regional Development Organization. I got the D in the wrong spot for a minute.
Bringing the acronym to the table.
Yeah. thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Otna region is another region that we wanted to highlight, too, because there's the uniqueness of Otna is you have 17 smaller communities, but they are on the road system. There's a significant amount of federal land ownership in the Otna region, and there's a large seasonal load growth. So the resources that are available in the Otna region are really more focused on biomass. There's hydropower resources, and then we are looking at interties and transmission. In addition, the Otna region through Copper Valley would potentially be one of the regions that would connect to the existing Rail Belt region. So, Mr. Chairman, this energy policy development coordination, I thought it would be a good opportunity for Gene to provide the committee with some of the, he's been on staff now with AEA since August. I had a laundry list of items and things that we wanted him to look at and work on when he first came into the door. So,
thank you, Sarah. That's great up and so far. Good job. I just want to. I feel better knowing that we've got Gene on board here helping you tag team this moving forward, and I'm feeling better about Alaska already, so good.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Sarah wanted me to just touch on a couple of the issues that that I've been working on in shop for the last couple of months. One of the ones that, in fact, is my understanding, legislation was introduced either yesterday or the day before in the Senate with regards to access. There are a couple of access issues. Some of them are access to the resource, trying to remove physical impediments to energy users that want access to the resource. And in particular, I'm thinking about biomass. The state has tremendous biomass resources, but in some aspects, the existing state statutes with regards to access to biomass were all geared towards harvesting timber for dimensional lumber or some other use. Now that we have a desire to try and get access to biomass as an energy source, there may be the need to tweak our state regulations and statutes so there's a clear policy call, or that we tee up a potential clear policy call for you to say that, yes, in fact, we want to make sure that Alaskans have access to biomass for as a source of energy. And so that's an issue that may be coming your way in proposed legislation. In addition, there's the issue of access, what I consider to be traditional access across lands. The state, of course, is a large landowner within the state boundaries. And in some aspects, rights-of-way across state land, or rights-of-way into a legislatively designated area may be problematic. We've got an issue where we have to connect the consumers with the source of power. So there may be, in fact, a wonderful hydro spot that could be developed, but then there's a question of whether you can then wield that power to the community where the consumers are. If you have to cross state land, if you have to cross a legislatively designated area, it might be a state park. When that state park was created, there may have been no thought given to the fact that there was a potential hydro source. Now that the cost of energy has gone up and energy is a very big issue, we might have to go back and adjust the policy call that was made at that time. Do we want to, number one, develop that source of energy, and are we going to give a right of access across the state land to get the energy to the consumer? So there's a couple of access-related issues there. In addition, Sarah touched on the fact that a policy was established to increase energy efficiency by 15% by the year 2020. We've had to work in-house to determine how are we going to measure whether we're achieving that goal? And so we just delivered to the administration yesterday sort of a proposal on how we propose to measure that and how we propose to coordinate the efforts of the different departments in measuring whether we're achieving that goal so that we, as time goes by and we implement the policy and the programs that you have funded, that we can come back to you and show you that, yes, in fact, we are achieving the policy goal that was established. We already mentioned that there is seems to be a little bit of a disconnect on how we get school districts to access some of the programs that you've set up, and we're working on trying to get through some barriers, make sure this different school districts fully understand the programs and the policy that that the state hopes to achieve, and that if we're going to measure the efficiency gains primarily on electric consumption and energy used for space heat, the schools are a large part of the infrastructure in the state of Alaska, certainly a large part of the governmentally owned infrastructure, and we want to make sure that we've got them plugged in to this metric on how we're going to measure whether we're achieving the goal. The 50% by the year 2025 goal that was established by the legislature, and that deals with a desire to have 50% of the state's electrical need served by alternative and renewable sources by the year 2025. Do we have projects that are in development right now that if in fact they all go forward, we will be able to achieve that goal? We believe at this point that we do. It is largely dependent on whether the Susitna-Wantana project goes forward, because the electrical load in the state of Alaska is so focused in the rail belt that unless we take a large step forward in achieving that goal within that region, then there's no way of really achieving the overall goal. And so there are a number of policy calls yet to be made with keeping that project going forward, funding issues that will come back before you, and of course the administration will be involved in those discussions. But again, that goal was established. Do we have things in motion that will actually allow us to achieve that goal? Then in addition, Sarah has been very focused on within AEA creating a very small team that can provide information to you to help vet some of the different projects and proposals that come forward. A number of people have said it's part of the blessing of the state is we have a lot of alternatives, but that's also a curse sometimes. And so as you try to focus the state's efforts on how do we lower the cost of energy for consumers, and different proposals come in, we have now developed a small team within AEA that can help vet those proposals. Nick Simoniak is an economist, a very bright young man that can help us crunch numbers and present information in an easily digestible form. We've also got a project engineer, Kirk Warren, that's part of that team, myself, and then Sarah, that can respond to your questions after the fact, after a proposal has been brought to you, or even give you some advice if you've got something teed up for a hearing next week and you sort of want to know, you know, what's the quick back of the envelope metrics, economic metrics on this project. What questions should you be asking as you go into a hearing? We've developed a team to provide you that information. And so we hope that team serves the authority well in making sure that we're evaluating the programs and that you've empowered us with, you've funded, but also will serve as a real useful resource for you as you engage in your 90 days of policy discussion.
Senator Wilkos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I don't walk out. I hope you didn't talk about this. But just from sort of a global perspective, are we better off pursuing individual village projects or regional projects, larger scale regional projects like they're talking about with the hydro around Bethel, or transmission lines off of Susitna Hydro spread all across the state? I mean, this is something I've been thinking a lot about. Do we want to, how statewide of an energy project or energy delivery plan do we want? I mean, what's sort of your philosophy on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, you've actually hit upon something that we've been talking about quite extensively, as Gene mentioned, within the team. You know, with respect to how broad. I think the issue with Alaska, of course, is that you have resources and you have a great distance between resources and load, and that's always going to be an issue. And that was something that we had discovered with working through the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan, with respect to building a transmission line isn't always the magical answer or the silver bullet answer in order to reduce energy costs, because there's a cost associated with building the transmission system, and you actually have to have the electrons to go over the system. And theoretically, what you want to do is make sure that the developed generation is cheaper than what is existing at the place where you want to deliver it. So, but those are things that we are working on, and that's something that, I think Gene can discuss a little bit more with respect to what we've already been doing on looking at some of these very the plans of trying to provide transmission throughout the entire state. And I think if you want to,
yeah. And Mr. Chairman, the senator's question, I think that let me just back up a little bit. There are people that say, well, the state still lacks an energy plan. I think actually, if you think about it, and hopefully the overview of today has given you sort of a brief look at the fact that we do have an energy plan. It was established by the legislature through legislation that was passed that established these goals, that established the programs to achieve the goals, that funds the authority to make sure that the programs are moving forward to achieve the goals. But one of the things that I think we've realized is that one size doesn't fit all. And so in this regional planning effort that we've got, we're actually now taking the pathway, which was sort of a look at what resources are available geographically in the state. Now work with the people in those geographic areas on how best to develop those resources for their use in a local area. As Sarah indicated, there are some areas where there may be a resource that can be developed, and then through transmission lines, it can be delivered to some of the smaller communities in that geographic area. Or there may be a determination that the combination of the local residential load of a village or number of villages in a region tied with some economic industrial demand might warrant then transmission over a larger geographic area to deliver. But the thought that we can just deliver energy across this huge geographic area, part of it is just driven by the geographic remoteness and the load. You can physically stretch a copper wire over a large area, but if you're serving a very low demand, the line losses that you could experience in delivering the electricity could equal or exceed the load that you're trying to cover. And so, again, we've developed a team to run that quick economics on those areas, to work with these geographic regional areas on trying to assess what makes the most sense for them.
Quick follow-up.
Thank you. Very brief. And just a comment. This is just something I've been thinking about. And I think this is a good discussion. I think I'm sure we'll have it for the next 90 days. But what does Alaska look like in 50 years? Does it look like every village having their own wind farm or solar panels? Or do we have transmission lines running all throughout the state? Or do we have regional hubs? I just think it's a great exercise for us to think about. I think it's important for us to think about. If we start spending huge amounts of money in various regions, maybe that is the answer. I really don't know. But I just think it's important for us as the committee and for your organization. It's a critical exercise for us because we're making huge investments in these projects.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, just a quick response to the senator's question there. I think for certain with the investments that we're making now, I'm not sure exactly what the price of power will be, but I think there will be less fluctuation in the price of power because we are focused more on alternatives and renewables. And for users of power, there's two metrics that they keep an eye on. How much does the power cost, and how certain is that? If you're a business trying to make an investment, you need to know not only how much is the power going to cost, but what's it going to cost next year? What's it going to cost 5 years from now? And the price of the power might not be as low as you want, but if you can count on it, you can start building a business plan around how you can meet that power cost. But if the power fluctuates up and down like a yo-yo, you don't know year to year, you know, what your business model is going to be. So at the very least, we're going to be bringing some more certainty to whatever that price is.
Thank you, Gene. Continue on, please. We got about 7 minutes, and we need to bamboos for the next committee.
And Mr. Chairman, the last two slides are really one slide. I just wanted to the AEA active projects. I just wanted to give a kind of a thumbnail sketch on you know, where the dollars that we're dealing with and the variety of projects that we're dealing with. So, you know, please, if there's any questions with respect to what this slide is saying to you, you know, please let me know, and we can certainly give you any additional detail that you want. And then also, you know, it is a legislative session, and we wanted to make sure you guys had the this isn't the Finance Committee. However, you know, you will eventually see the AEA budget, and we wanted to at least give you a snapshot of what our FY14 budget summary looks like in our budget request. And a lot of the capital projects that you see here directly support the programs that we discussed earlier this morning. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for allowing us to give you this overview.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good job. And to the members of the committee, I'd like to thank Sarah and Jean today for coming here and getting used to that table. Wear it in because we'll see you again. Great presentation. Next meeting is third of this committee is Thursday, January 31st at 7:30 a.m. And we'll have the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority coming in. We're going to be talking about LNG projects on the North Slope. And I'd like to have unanimous consent to bring without objection. I'd like to bring the meeting to a close.
All right. Karen. Thank you.